What is a proverb? We looked at that in the first 9 chapters of the introduction, and yet all those 9 chapters do is prepare us for receiving this type of proverbial instruction, which is an ancient form of instruction, of using short little verse with some antithetical statement in it. In other words, there's a statement, then maybe a contrast to that statement. Sometimes it's a statement with an illustration to bolster that statement. But it's this short little verse that says a lot. Adapted to people with very little education. It was used in many ways of instructing people. And of course, we have proverbs in our idioms in America. We often will say something like, a stitch in time saves 9. Or a bird in the hand is worth, 2 in the bush. They're proverbs that we use. They're very helpful in just kind of keeping a truth that just maybe we wouldn't really see how this could be expressed in a lot of words, but to put it in such a short little package, it helps us remember that truth. And that's what the proverbs are. Now, of course, Solomon is a case example for proverbs. God gave him 3,000. And yet, the amazing thing about Solomon and the thing that we noted was that he himself didn't keep his own advice. So, the old saying, you can preach to others and not live it yourself. It's very easy because he fell in the manner of women, in the manner of money, and in the manner of pride. All 3 areas that he warns against in these Proverbs. And yet when we're going through this, I want us to be conscious of the real author behind these, not just Solomon, but a greater than Solomon. The one who, the larger volume, which is really called the Word of Christ. This is generally the Word of God to us. So we know that God is speaking these things to us in a practical way. Proverbs, to me, are very practical. And that's one of the reasons why I like reading them in the morning. I like to have some application because I'm going to be dealing with people. And, when you deal with people, you've heard the saying, the world would be a great place if it were not for people. But then on the other side, the world would be a boring place if it were not for people. So it's like the blessing, the greatest blessing in your life and the greatest curse in your life come from the same source, people. But Proverbs help us to massage those relationships and to be able to wisely walk among different types of people. There are those with a lot of wisdom who can adeptly move and maneuver in a number of groups. And there are those with very little wisdom that are very narrow in their associations. Because maybe they push people the wrong way or they push buttons in people and they just don't know how their words are coming out. Well, I'll tell you, if that's your case, the Proverbs are going to be a great blessing to you because you're going to learn some things. You're going to learn how to get along with people, how to understand people, how to relate. And you also learn a lot about yourself in the Proverbs. In Proverbs chapter 10, we're thrust right into the beginning of these things. And, the thing that we'll learn about Proverbs is they're hard to find a theme in any particular chapter. There are some prominent emphases that come out from chapter to chapter, but so often many commentators have tried to adapt to this by just instead of even teaching through it verse by verse, they do it topically, pick out all the proverbs about this subject and talk about that, all the proverbs about this subject and talk about that. But I find that a little artificial for me. I'd rather realize the Lord gave it to us in this form for a reason, and it's probably beneficial for us to take it in this way. But there will be some times as we're going through this, a certain proverbs that I might run through a little quicker because it doesn't fit with the overall feeling of that particular chapter. If I do, don't be afraid because later on that particular proverb will be picked up in another portion. So we will get the full picture of it either way. The Proverbs of Solomon. He begins. Now in chapter 10, he opens up with saying, "A wise son makes a glad father. But a foolish son is the grief of his mother." There's nothing more weighty on our hearts as parents than to have our children be wise, to know what is right, to do the right thing, to be faithful, to be fruitful before the Lord. It's the foundation for society. And it's a grief to us when our children go in an opposite direction than that which we've instructed for them. Our mothers, grieving over their children who've made foolish decisions. It's prominent in our society today. And even in the Old Testament, even Rebecca was grieving over the fact her son Esau went and took a wife among the Canaanites, a woman that had no even connection to God at all. And it was a grief to her. And she was weary that she said, "I'm weary of my life if Jacob takes a wife among the daughters of Heth, like those who are the daughters of the land. What good will my life be, she says. I mean, very dramatic. Just I can't handle that. It is something that as a parent, what your children do, it affects you the most. And that's why I believe it's so important in this foundation. Consider your children, the example they're going to follow. Will it be indulgence that you've exampled or restraint? Will it be seeking after pleasure or seeking after godliness? Because the same thing you're modeling is going to be followed by them. And so if you want them to be wise, then the best course of action is for you yourselves to be wise and to do the right thing. And so now we get into some instructions. In verse 2, and in fact, verse 2 through 7, we see what I would emphasize as or see as the foolishness or wisdom. What is the outcome of it? What is the outcome? And in fact, in this chapter, a lot is talked and emphasized about the outcome and mixed in with the practical instruction of our ways and our words. But largely, the emphasis is on the outcome of the choices that we make. And that's all prudence. Prudence is about thinking ahead. What will it mean down the road? What will it mean, the decision I'm making now? How will it affect others? How will it affect me? Well, Proverbs help us to see this. And he begins by telling us that the treasures of wickedness profit nothing. Now, there are treasures in wickedness. You can certainly find opportunities when you stray off the path. There are people that do nothing more than think 24/7 ways to con you and to take advantage of you and to get ahead for themselves by stepping on the ruins of other people's lives. I think of this whole Enron scandal. What a tragic thing to see that people saved their whole life and invested in that company with 90% of their savings because they trusted that secure company, and now it's bankrupt and all that they saved is gone. It hurts, you know, for them. But, you know, the treasures of wickedness, they profit nothing in the end. That's the point. They may profit a little for a short time, a passing season. But in the end, where will it get you? But notice, righteousness delivers from death. All the treasures in the world aren't going to have you escape from that one enemy, because we're all going to die. But righteousness helps you be delivered from that. Why? Because it changes what death is. Now, this righteousness, of course, is not a righteousness that's derived from within us. The Bible says there is none righteous. No, not one. Case closed. We all fail the test. We all miss the mark. We all don't have what it takes to get past that last enemy, death, on our own. But the Lord devised a way, uniquely, that His justice and His mercy would be satisfied by sending His Son into the world and dying in our place. And what happened? The Bible describes as He imputes righteousness to those who believe on Him. So the righteousness of Christ, His perfect life, is put to our account. So when the books are open, the Lord looks at your account and goes, oh, you've got a full account. You're not bankrupt because His account has been imputed to yours. That's what the whole gospel is all about. It's imputed righteousness. That righteousness then gives you power over death because now death has no sting. So all the treasures in the world aren't going to have you escape. Though you gain the whole world, yet lose your own soul, what does it profit you? And so we see the proverb. He also says, in a practical daily sense, the Lord will not allow the righteous soul to famish. But He casts away the desire of the wicked. Notice the contrast. The desire or the need of the righteous, you know, basic sustenance of life, sustenance that he needs to live on, the Lord won't allow him to famish. Now, this doesn't mean that the way is going to be an easy way, that there's going to be no trouble, there's going to be no problems. Because quite in fact, we will all face difficulties. Yet God turns those difficulties into good. He says not one sparrow falls to the earth, but what He doesn't care. And how much more value are you than sparrows? So the temptations, the trials, the difficulties, the things we face now, ultimately the Lord will use them for our good, so we will not be destitute, we will not famish. But notice the desire of the wicked He casts away. The desire they have will never come to fruition. He who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Now, this isn't so much of an outcome as it is a way to the outcome. And I think here is a practical illustration. how this all works. How is the outcome good for those who are righteous? Well, if you have a slack hand, you're going to be poor. If you're lazy, it's going to mean being poor. But the hand of the diligent makes rich. Being busy. You know, I look at this in the sense of taking opportunity. It's about priorities. And he ties this in with the very next verse, which fits well. He says, "He who gathers in summer is a wise son, and he who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame." You got one who's lazy, one who's diligent. One who is gathering in the summer, who's diligent, and the lazy person is sleeping when the opportunity is there to harvest the crops. Now, can you imagine someone sleeping during harvest? It seems ludicrous, and it almost is comical. I mean, here they've worked all the year to get the crops going, and then when the time comes to reap them, they're sleeping. Wake up. What's the matter with you? You've only got a short window to get those crops in. You know, in many ways, practically speaking, our lives are a picture of this. Opportunity knocks, and if we're ready, we take advantage of that. But so many people are not ready when opportunity knocks. When they're not ready, opportunity is pictured with wings on it. It flies away, and it never comes back. You know, when you're diligent, it's going to bring fruition. You're going to be gathering in the summer because you see ahead what's it going to take for the winter time. You know, just like when things are good, now is the time to gather. Joseph was a case in point of having the foresight to look ahead when he said, you know, we're going to have 7 years of famine coming up after 7 years of bounty, of plenty. Let's gather in the plenty so that we'll have time enough for the famine. And of course, with the forethought, which is what this implies, they were spared. But what a great shame it is to not take advantage of the opportunity. Now I look at this also as a sense of the opportunity of youth. You know, when you're young, you have opportunity that older people don't have. You know, you're young, you're strong, you get educated. There's certain things you can do. I mean, young children are really sponges when it comes to learning. The opportunity, the best time when they're young, is to implant in them the things of the Lord, because it will come to fruit later on. If you don't plant it now, you're not going to have anything to reap. And I look at this, and I know statistically, most people who receive the Lord do so before they turn adults. 90% of the people who received the Lord did so before they were adults, in their teenage years mostly. That's pretty astounding. What does that tell you? Later on, the opportunity isn't quite there. Your heart may be hardened. Maybe you get set in your ways. You know, and it is amazing when someone does come in their 30s and 40s and even 50s and 60s. Amazing. We had one lady that was 92 years of age who received the Lord here one Sunday. Well, that, let me just tell you, statistically, it's a miracle. But God is merciful even then. Yet most opportunity is when you're young. Now, I was told when I was, you know, just became a Christian, I was 18 years old, and I was lamenting. I was like, why did I wait so long? I was so bummed. It was like, oh man, I wish I'd have known him sooner. I could have done so many things in high school, and I regretted so much. And everyone was telling me, oh, you're too young to be religious. You know, wait till you get older. Sow your wild oats right now. Have fun as a young person. And that was the counsel in the world. No, that's bad counsel. You know, take advantage of the opportunity you have now to follow the Lord and be used of him. Because once it's gone, it's gone. You know, time is valuable. We're told to redeem the time, for the days are evil. You know, to buy low and sell high is the investment strategy we're instructed in. And yet, in a way, when you take advantage of the opportunity of gathering in the summer, you're buying low so that when it's needed, it will be a high value. Spiritually speaking, when you invest in your life now, take the time to get instructed in the Scriptures. Read the Bible. Get equipped spiritually. Become more knowledgeable of the things of God. Now while you can, because later on you're going to find it's going to be very, very valuable. What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a while. It's short. It's very quick. Notice verse 6, blessings are ahead on the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. You know, blessings come to those who are righteous. Violence covers the mouth of the wicked. What they've given out has come back to them. The memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. Now, if you're like most people, and I hope you're not in this respect, most people might have the feeling like, do I really care what people think of me when I'm dead? Do I really care what they say about me, what you know they think of me? I won't really care at that point. You know what? That's short-sighted. How would you think about a life that's so lived, that has influence on people even after you're dead? What would you think about a life? I can tell you, I have in my library a number of commentators that were written by godly men who invested their life in the study of the Scriptures and expounded them in such a rich fashion. They're dead and gone, many of the people, the books that I have, the authors in my library, most of them are dead and gone. But their life still speaks to me. It still has influence. It still encourages. It still blesses. It still saves. It's still an amazing thing. And I think, you know what? My life could be that way. I do care what it will be like after I'm dead. What people think of me. Will they want to model their life after me? There are certain men that have gone to be with the Lord that I look back and I go, wow, I want to be like that. They left a legacy. You too can leave a legacy by your life. It will matter after you're dead. Because you can still save many people just by the example that you set. And the memory is blessed of the righteous. But the name of the wicked? Because they were all about self. They were all about me. I want for me, my life. And they never thought anything in the future. And they don't care. They're just taking care of themselves. And they're thinking about, oh, when I retire, then I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then they live their life into themselves. And they really have no lasting blessing upon others. Oh, and with their wealth, they might, you know, influence some politician to name a street or a city after themselves so that they can be remembered, but they'll never really be remembered for good. It rots. It's really worthless. The wise in heart. Now, here we've looked at the outcome. Now he gives us a key. Both 8 and verse 17 are kind of the keys to receiving knowledge. Notice what he says. The wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. Now, why does he say this? Because I believe the key to us having anything of value in our life spiritually is the teachability that we have now. How teachable are you? How open to instruction are you? The wise in heart receive commands, but you know, the fool, he's too busy giving commands. He's too busy prating about what he thinks and what he wants and what he is going to do. He's not listening to anybody else or anybody else's counsel. The wise receive. Now, if you ever come to a place in your life where you think no one can tell you anything, and I've seen a few proud souls that they get very knowledgeable in their field, and they're arrogant, and they're proud, and they think no one can tell them anything, they can't learn from anybody. And I'll tell you, God has to humble them if they're going to really learn, because there's a lot more to learn. If you come to the Lord and let's say you're talented, especially in a particular area, and you know your field well, still there's a lot of aspects the Lord might want to speak to your heart about how to approach it. You know, you might know that field, but there may be some applications of that knowledge in areas that you'll never be able to influence others if you don't listen to the directions of the Lord. You're going to receive. A wise in heart will receive. Not a wise in hammer, but a wise in heart. He's going to receive. Now, when I think of teachability, if you come across someone that, let's say they give you the impression, you know, they know it all. They don't want to hear from you. And, you know, there are people like that. You say, oh, let me show you how to. Oh, I already know how to do it. I already know how to do it. They don't want to hear anybody tell them anything. See, eventually what's going to happen is they're going to be very, very foolish because they don't have any instruction. When it comes to your life spiritually, you know, if someone tries to give you counsel or insight, do you listen? Do you receive it? Sometimes the Lord puts people in my life just to test me. Am I going to hear from Him even if it's through someone that maybe I don't look up to as a mentor, but maybe God is speaking through them? I've learned, and I've been a Christian for 26 years, but at the same time, I know that someone who just received the Lord yesterday could give me some information that would be very beneficial to me because the Lord could use them. It's how He works among His body, you know. He fills us. We need to receive from one another. That's the key. Now, from verse 9 through verse 14, he gets to some practical things. He who walks with integrity walks securely. But he who perverts his ways will become known. When you have integrity and you do what's right, no matter what, And no matter who's looking, because that's just you. You're going to do the right thing because you're going to do it as unto the Lord. You see, you don't care what, in the sense of trying to do things to appear good. You just care what the Lord thinks, so you're walking with integrity. There's a security there. Why? Well, you never have to worry about who's watching. You never have to worry if someone's looking over your back. You never have to worry about getting caught because there's nothing to catch. Because you're above board. The IRS calls you for an audit. You ho-hum. Oh, yeah, it's going to be a hassle. But you're not afraid of being caught or being found out about anything because your books are in order. You're walking with integrity, so there's security. But he who perverts his ways will become known. When you go your own way and do your own thing and you twist it and you know, a little shady deal here and there, you know what? Let me just tell you a piece of advice. Don't do it because one day he will become known. It'll be shouted from the housetops. It'll be news. And everyone's going to know. Eventually it will come out. You know, there's an old saying, and it's one of our proverbs in our American idioms. We say, what goes around comes around. You know, that has some application. It happens. Notice he goes on to say, he who winks with the eye causes trouble, but a prating fool will fall. Now, we have no clue what that culture, in that culture, what winking meant. Winking means different things to different cultures. It can mean something really cute, like a person winking to a young person, just a friendly wink. You know, how you doing? It can mean something flirtatious, you know, if you're in that type of a setting. I was told by somebody from Brazil last night that what it means in Brazil, if you wink at another man's wife, you're a dead man. You know, they'll kill you. Well, in this culture, we don't know what it was, but it was bad because whoever winks with the eye causes trouble. Some feel that it meant to be that you're hiding your intentions, you're deceiving someone, you're doing one thing here, but you're kind of, you know, you're doing something else behind the scenes, and it's just going to cause trouble. And then, but a prating fool will fall. Now, why he contrasts that, I don't have a clue. It's your best guess. Verse 11. The mouth of the righteous is a well of life, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. The mouth of the righteous is a well. Now, a well in those days was like a source of life. Do you know that your words can be a tremendous blessing to people? Or they can be a tremendous curse. You know, the mouth of the righteous, what? It's a well of life, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. The mouth of the wicked, you see, they're all about themselves. And they'll hurt anybody that gets in their way. And if they perceive some competition or some person that might be hindering their promotion, their mouth gets to going. And they're going to use their mouth, and it's going to cause all kinds of problems. The mouth of the righteous is a well of life. You know, and there are people that are always like the critical. They're going to tear something down. They always see the negative side of it. Well, that person did this and that. And, you know, I can't believe they didn't. They're always talking from a critical standpoint, complaining, murmuring about something. But then there's those that always leave a sense of just like a fresh air when they go through. It's like there's just a, you know, they encourage people. You know the type I'm talking about. They smile and encourage you, and you're like, you feel good to be around that person. You wish that they were your best friend. You'd like to hang around them more. Well, you know what? It's a well of life. How are you using your words? Man, you can make a tremendous difference in somebody, but just by a kind word or an encouraging word to them. Break the ice. You know, everyone is so isolated. And I noticed New York City, it's getting more and more back to its old ways. It seemed like there was a lot more openness in the first few months after the Trade Center disaster and the attack. And now it seems like it's hard to break into that exterior again. But people want it. When someone does, everyone jumps in. Someone breaks the ice and says an encouraging word or encourages someone. Everyone, just their eyes brighten up a little bit. We need that. It's a well of life. It's something that encourages us. Hatred stirs up strife. Looks for opportunities to hurt people. But love covers all sins. Hatred loves to instigate people not liking each other. Hey, you know what so-and-so said about you? And they go to the other person, you know what, I can't believe what they did. You know what they meant when they said that about you? I don't like what they said. And they instigate people not liking each other. But love covers all sins. You know what this means to me? And in one of the translations, love covers a multitude of sins. When I see this, I realize that this is a foundation for friendship. And that's what a friend is. A friend is one who, there's a great balance for a friend. A friend, the Bible says, the kisses of an enemy are deceitful, but the wounds of a friend are what? Faithful. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Why? Because when a friend really knows you and they see something that's in your life that's not right, they're going to tell you. Because they're a friend. They feel close enough to be able to say something to you. But at the same time, you know they're not going to be telling others about that. You're safe. The confidentiality is there. They've got the balance, a beautiful balance of them confronting you, and yet you know that your heart is safe in their hands. And here's what happens when you don't want to hear it from a friend. When you don't want to receive instruction or correction. Eventually, you'll have few friends. And then you won't be very secure in your life because the friends that you have will be shallow. And if you confide in them something, one of these shallow friends, others might hear it because there's not the love there. You know, it's a tricky business, relationships. It's very, very complicated. It really is. It should be much more simple. If we walked with integrity, it would be. If we were what we were and we were teachable and humbled and we wanted to grow, relationships would be a great blessing. But because so often we're not, it's hurtful. But love covers a multitude of sins. It seeks to help a friend. They don't want that friend's weakness to be known around the world. They're going to cover that sin. They're going to encourage them. Wisdom is found in the lips of him who has understanding. But a rod is for the back of him who is devoid of understanding. Wisdom comes out from those who have understanding. But you know the only thing that the one who is devoid can learn from? Is searing pain. That's it. When you're devoid of understanding, the only thing that gets through to you is pain. I think it was C.S. Lewis. It was C.S. Lewis who said something to the effect of, God whispers in our normal situations, in our life. He speaks a little bit louder in trials, but he shouts in pain. Pain God uses. He says it's a megaphone to an unbelieving world. The only thing that people will listen sometimes is a disruption of their comfort zone. But why should you have to be so devoid of understanding that it takes some traumatic thing to get your attention? I don't know. We're all like that in the beginning, I think. But once you gain wisdom, it's like you learn from a word. You know the saying, a word to the wise is sufficient? It's all you need to say to a wise person. One word. And you know what? They take it to their heart and they want to deal with it. Where you can beat the back of a fool for 20 minutes and it still won't get through. This is the point. Wise people store up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. They store up knowledge. They've always got a reservoir, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. It's kind of like when I think of the entertainment industry, people so full of themselves, so miserable because of being full of themselves. Their mouths are near destruction. It's like they really don't have any reservoir of wisdom to deal with their life because they've so isolated themselves from John Q. Public, afraid of all the wackos that might be out there. They've sheltered themselves. They've closed off the world. And now they only associate among themselves and oftentimes lack wisdom as a result of it. Verse 15, the rich man's wealth is in his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. In the context, it kind of stands out. Simple fact is, yeah, you can trust your wealth, and a rich man's wealth is his strong city. He's got the strength to protect himself, but the destruction of the poor is their poverty. They don't have anything to protect themselves. But conversely, the rich are trusting in the wrong thing. They're trusting in that strong city. And it's not going to save them with the things that really matter. Where the poor knows he has no protection, so he tends to look to God. You know, the poor receive the gospel much more readily than the rich. Because their hearts are more open. Verse 16, the labor of the righteous leads to life. The wages of the wicked to sin. He who keeps instruction is in the way of life. But he who refuses correction goes astray. We come back to that key. Keeping instruction, it's a way of life. It's constantly being teachable. but he who refuses correction goes astray. You can very easily get people to a point where they'll never tell you anything negative about yourself ever again because you've made it very clear you don't want to hear it. And now you're isolated. Now no one's going to tell you. They're going to walk. They're going to tiptoe around you. They're not going to, you know, pop your little bubble. They're going to let you live in your deception that everything's fine while you've got this big wart growing out in the side of your face. But you can't say anything because they'll get offended. And that spiritual wart grows and grows and grows until you're kind of walking unbalanced. You know, you can't even hold it up because you've basically isolated yourself. But when you keep instruction, when you're listening to others, you're learning, you're growing. We're in a constant state of learning as disciples. It's a way of life. Verse 18 now to verse 20, we get back to the lips. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips. Hiding hatred isn't so much meaning that if you hate somebody, you've got to let it out. You know, he doesn't want you just to say, okay, well, be honest with people. But the idea here is that you hate a person and you're hiding it for an advantage. You want to take advantage of them. So you're flattering them with your words, but you're hiding the hatred. That is taking advantage of someone. And whoever spreads slander is a fool. You spread slander, you're a fool. You've been talking about people. Stop it. Because I learn a lot more about a person by what they say of others than you can imagine. I can pick up very, very subtle things. How careful a person handles someone else's reputation. Even if they know there's an issue that's not right, they're careful with their words because they don't want to give the impression that, you know, and they're wise in that respect. But you know, there's some people that are very free with their words about others. Oh, John, he's just, you know, he's a thief. You know, he's a liar. And I told him the other day and he lied, you know, and it's like they just spread things about people very undiscriminatingly. And I'll tell you what, I learn a lot more about them. And so often when a person leaves one circle of friends, see, you can always go through all these circles of friends. If you never learn anything and you never learn how to have a friend and be a friend, of course, in order to have a friend, you have to be a friend. That's the prerequisite. If you're not a friend, then eventually you're going to go through friends very quickly. So you get this one circle, and after about 2 weeks, they get so tired of you, they can't stand you. And so you go to two other friends. Instead of learning what you need to learn and learning that it's you, it's not them, you just say, it's them, and you go to the next circle of friends, and so you talk about those friends. Oh, they're all hypocrites over there, you know, they're this and that, and you know, but you guys are cool, you know, I'm glad I'm with you guys. And then after 2 weeks, they can't stand you because they see right through you. So you go to the other circle of, you know, another group, and then you talk about that group, and you know what? That's from a person who is absolutely devoid of any wisdom. He's a fool. He's spreading slander. He's always got to talk negative about somebody else. Instead of give people the benefit of the doubt. I've learned to try to put the best light on people as I can. I want to give people the benefit of the doubt, if there is any doubt. I want to put the best reading on their words, on their letters to me, on the emails. Boy, that's a tough one. Because, you know, you can be very free with your words and email. Send, bang, it's gone. It just comes right out of your mouth, or your brain, into the keyboard, into the computer, and it's in another person's hands. And then you realize, ooh, that sounds pretty harsh. Lesson. Put the best reading on that email or that letter or that word that someone gave to you. Give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, they might have had a bad day. They might just be frustrated about one thing and it's coloring everything else. I always do that. I always try to give the best light on anything. And I'll tell you, it's a rule of life that's helped me a lot. And the opposite of that is always looking at the bad side of it. And then you turn into that type of a person. Verse 19, in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. In the multitude of email, sin is not lacking. He who restrains his lips is wise. You know the saying, even if you're a fool, if you keep your mouth shut, you'll be thought wise. You know, even a fool will be thought wise if he just keeps his mouth shut. You restrain your words. In a multitude of words, sin is not lacking. Why? Because we don't know the repercussions of the words we say. And when we're very free with them, eventually we're going to offend somebody and then we don't know it. Just be wise with your words. Be like that old owl. Wise old owl. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. See, the value of the tongue that you can have, it can be so valuable. In fact, you don't know how valuable that tongue can be. It is choice silver. What you can do in a person's life by encouraging, you have no idea how much it will mean. People that said a word of encouragement to me at a very crucial points in my life set the course of my life in the right direction. I mean, they had great impact by a few words. That choice silver, I want to have that. And I want you to have that. That choice silver that can come. You know, the other opportunity, however, is the heart of the wicked is worth little. See, so into himself, no value to anybody else. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of wisdom. You can feed, or you can starve yourself. You know, what a great contrast. The lips of the righteous have an overflow for others, but the wicked are dying for lack of wisdom for their own life. The blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. Now we come to verse 22 through verse 30. We come back to the outcome again. So he shared a little bit about the outcome, gave us a key about teachability, then gave us some practical advice. Now we're coming back to some outcome, and there'll be some practical advice as well. Verse 22, the blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. You can get rich a number of ways. But you ever wonder the sorrow that's associated with great wealth? Why people that are wealthy talk about their problems and their issues, and why people are interviewed and they've got all these issues? Because with great wealth comes a lot of sorrow, because so often it's a barrier with relationships with others. You know, and you isolate yourself in a way that you can only hire people around you that are going to tell you nice things. And it has a lot of sorrow attached to it. But you know, when the blessing of the Lord comes upon your life, there's no sorrow attached to it. It's a joy. To do evil is like sport to a fool, but a man of understanding has wisdom. You know, sport to a fool is just hurting others, doing evil. But a man of understanding has wisdom. The fear of the wicked will come upon him, and the desire of the righteous will be granted. Look at this amazing contrast in the outcome. This is probably one of the most amazing pictures. The fear of the wicked. Now, what can you imagine would be the greatest fear of the wicked? Coming to the end of their life and finding out they were wrong. There really is a God. I can't imagine the fear that will happen when they've banked their whole life on the fact they'll never have to give an account to a higher being and they find out they were wrong. The fear of the wicked will, not may come, but will come upon him. Now picture the greatest fear now. It's a guarantee it's coming to the wicked. But I love this contrast. The desire of the righteous will be granted. You've got fears on one hand, and you got desires on the other hand. The fear of the wicked is going to come upon them in judgment time. When they stand before God and answer for their sin, and they'll be cast into the lake of fire forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Regretting all the opportunities they had to repent of their sin in their life. Remembering as seeing the constant portrayal of their life before their eyes and the decisions they made and the regret and the pain and the sorrow and the agony forever. And then the desire. What do you desire? The greatest desire. You know, like I said when I first received the Lord, if I'd have known it was going to be this good, I would have received the Lord a lot sooner. If I'd have known the peace. And you know, it gets better. It's like a marriage. You know, it gets better every year when you're diligent and receiving the things the Lord wants to teach you. It gets better. And I'll tell you, I can't imagine as good as it is following the Lord, knowing Him. Yeah, there's trials, there's difficulties we all face, but they're nothing in comparison to the joys. And then the hope, the desire that one day I'm going to stand in His presence forever and ever and ever. And the glory of heaven unfold. What an amazing thing. See, the wicked are going to get what they fear. The righteous are going to get what they desire. When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more, but the righteous has an everlasting foundation. is vinegar to the teeth. Now, that basically brings us to verse 26. And 26 is one of those things that just in the middle of this section of the outcome, it kind of stands out and really has no context for it, and kind of wonder where it fits here. And maybe Solomon was writing these grand things and then sent a message through a courier, and he didn't deliver it right, and so he just thought of this verse. And he came to his mind and he had to write it down while it was in his mind. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, which you could say would be an irritant, so is the lazy man to those who send him. You ever depend upon a lazy person to do something? You're waiting a long time. Where Solomon just kind of like, you know, he's writing this grand thing about the everlasting foundation of the righteous, and then he remembers this lazy guy he sent on an errand. He's like, it's vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes. He's going to write that down. So then he gets back to his theme. The fear of the Lord prolongs days, and the years of the wicked will be shortened. What a truth that is, not only in this life, but in the life to come. In this life, you know, statistically, those who live righteous lives tend to live longer and more rich and happy lives. Statistically, we look at some of the Gallup polls and some of the research that various polls have done. And it makes sense. You know, you have less vices that are harming your body. You're going to live longer. You know, you don't smoke or drink or, you know, put things that are harmful into your body, or you have a balanced diet and you get exercise. You just tend to think about keeping your body in shape. You're going to live longer. The years of the wicked will be shortened. Filled with, he just wants to indulge himself. And of course, indulging yourself is a way to shorten your life. The hope of the righteous will be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked will perish. All he expected, all he'd hoped for, all he desired, it's all going to perish. The way of the Lord is strength for the upright, but the destruction will come to the workers of iniquity. So this whole picture of outcome, and then of course the final point in the outcome is the righteous will never be removed, but the wicked will not inhabit the earth. One day this earth is going to be renewed, and the wicked will have no place in it. It'll be a place of righteousness that the Lord will establish, and they won't be removed. And then he gets back to the tongue in closing this. Of course, remember, chapters and verses were added much later to the Bible so that you understand when Solomon was writing this, he wasn't necessarily closing a chapter. But the guy who made the chapters and verses for our ease in finding things saw it fit to end right here. I don't agree with him, but it's here, and since I don't want to get too confusing, let's look at these on the tongue again. The mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom, but the perverse tongue will be cut out. You know, what a strong language. And the lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, the mouth of the wicked what is perverse. Now, before you zip up your Bibles and make that annoying noise in the end, before I get a chance to close mine, you're already out the door. I think that when we take a close look at our lives and let these things become a mirror, every one of us at one point or another is going to get pierced by these things. Every one of us is going to have something here that just, ooh, that got me. Lloyd, you just stuck that right in there and now you're twisting it, you know. The Word does that to us sometimes. It does pierce us to the very core because we kind of, the mirror is a little clearer now. We see ourselves and we go, ooh, I don't like that. But that's good. That's okay. To see yourself is a good thing. It's not the most pleasant thing, but it's a good thing. Because when we do see ourselves, we will appeal to the Lord. Lord, am I like that? I don't want to be that way. I want to have an eternal perspective. I don't want to live my life for myself. How, forgive me, Lord, that I'm just spending all everything I earn on myself. I'm spending all my time on things that pertain to what I want to do. Forgive me for just not being a true friend to others and blessing them, but just thinking, oh, I don't have enough friends and no one treats me right. See, it's all about what God is trying to reveal, that nature of self within us, that only He can really transform to give us and plant that seed of love, that we genuinely really care for others. And we put others' interests above our own. That's when you're really going to start living. That's when you're really going to enjoy life. Because that's how God made you. The manufacturer's instructions are right here. you can't do any better than what he tells us and gives us instruction on. So if you are in the category of those who've already come to the Lord, but you haven't really been submitted under his discipleship, maybe you're more isolated. Maybe you're not involved in a home group. You're not involved in a smaller group. You're not involved in a circle of friends here at Calvary that kind of, keep you on the right track and challenge you to keep going forward and, that are honest with you about issues that they see. Well, why are you doing that? Questioning you. It's good to have people question you. Why are you doing that? So that you can grow and you can mature. Proverbs are going to help you. You're going to be like the manual, and then you're going to have the other people who are the test cases. But then there may be some here who you haven't yet submitted to the Lord at all. You're still doing your own thing. You haven't really yielded under his lordship, and this is like reading somebody else's mail. What does that have to do with me? But yet now maybe God has spoken to you through it. Maybe he's shown you some practical things that in your own life it's not there, and you're not where you should be. The Lord wants to draw you to him. It's a matter of a gift of eternal life. I'm not contrasting the wicked with the righteous with the standpoint of saying, some of you are good, some of you are bad, and that's the way it is. Rather, the wicked can forsake his wicked ways, and he can become righteous, not on his own, but by appealing to the righteousness that comes from God, by confessing he is a sinner and he needs salvation. You can be declared by God today righteous if you trust in the Lord Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior. You can be declared righteous. He will look at you as if you never sinned, because the account that he looks at when he opens the books will be Jesus' account. And then as you have that account reckoned to you, you'll also have the power to start walking and following him. But you're going to find that you still have a lot of old data, a lot of old knowledge, a lot of old habits that will come up and rear their ugly head to get in your way. And you've got to grow past them, put them beside, put them behind you, and grow in the reality of what the Lord has done in you.